Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 17 of Scholarly Peers podcast. I'm your host, Sin Wong Chong. In this episode, we are going to talk to another senior academic and journal editor, Professor Heil Reinders, who edits the journal Innovation in Language Learning and Teaching. And it gives me great privilege to welcome Heil to our podcast. Thank you very much, Heil, for taking the time.
Thanks, Sin Wong, for inviting me.
So as you know, our podcast is about insiders' experience in journal peer review. Can you first briefly introduce yourself and in particular your experience in journal peer review?
Yes, certainly. I'm one of those creatures that was born in one place, lives in another, but doesn't work there and kind of engages in academic activities in a range of different countries. So my life is as complex and interesting as it might appear from the outside. I'm based in New Zealand, was born in Holland, and work at three universities, one in the United States, Anaheim University, one in Thailand, King Mongkut University, and one in Japan, Kanda University of International Studies. And well, over the years, I've engaged in a wide range of review and editorial and journal management roles, most notably, as you mentioned, the Journal of Innovation in Language Learning and Teaching, which Terry Lamb and I founded in 2007, I think. So it's almost been a decade and a half. And yeah, it's been a wonderful journey up to this point.
Right. Okay. Thank you. So obviously you have had experience as an author, a peer reviewer, and of course, as you mentioned, a journal editor. I wonder if you can share with us some unforgettable peer review experiences as an author first. And this is what I said to all of my guests. I will leave it up to you to interpret the word unforgettable. So you can tell us both positive, negative, or mixed experiences.
Right. Well, let me search through the treasure trove that occasionally is the sieve that I also refer to as my brain. Well, there was one interesting experience a few years ago where I had submitted an article for consideration on the topic of learner autonomy. And as you may know, Sin Wong, because you and I have known each other for a few years now, that's an area of interest of mine, and I like to claim that I have some knowledge and experience in that particular field. But well, not according to the reviewer of this particular journal, who not only gave me a scathing review of the paper that I had submitted, which is fine, I can deal with that, but also proceeded to tell me that I didn't actually know all that much about autonomy, and that if I had done my homework, I would have read some enlightening articles and books published by a person called Heil Reinders, which of course is myself, and also Phil Benson, who just a year before I published a book with on the topic of autonomy. So that was one of those, giggle it away moments where you realize that despite our best intentions, we can't always please everyone, including ourselves.
Yeah, that's an interesting experience. And I guess that's something that Twitter, academics on Twitter often talk about, asking the authors to cite themselves in the peer review. So that's obviously a hallmark of being successful in academia, maybe. So now let's think about your experience as a peer reviewer for journals. Any unforgettable experience from that perspective?
Right. As a reviewer myself, it doesn't get much better than this. The first time I was asked to review a paper for a fairly major journal, probably about 20, 25 years ago, I found the article that I was asked to review particularly excellent and extremely compelling, and it took me a little while to realize that it was because the author of that particular paper had plagiarized my entire thesis and condensed it into an article format. Of course I'm just joking about the particularly excellent part, but yeah, that was my first experience of reviewing a journal article, was to find that it was essentially plagiarized, had plagiarized my own work. And so that was a good introduction, I suppose, to the pitfalls and pleasures of peer review.
Right. I think that's a very important topic, especially I think for our listeners who are mostly doctoral students or early career researchers, that when they kind of identify an issue and that issue may go beyond their own capacity to deal with, you know, how did you respond to that when you say when you said that it you suspected plagiarism of that particular piece? What do peer reviewers do in that case?
Well, this is a long time ago, and now, of course, thanks to the efforts of organizations like COPE and the kind of work that you and your colleagues are doing, there's a lot more public awareness of the review process and the challenges around it. And I think the range of options that is open to people now is much wider than it was before. At that stage, I simply contacted the editor of the journal, explained the situation, and the paper was withdrawn. But as I said, I think people now have more opportunities to raise issues.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. So lastly, putting your journal editor's hat. So you shared two pretty, I mean, slightly negative, but kind of revealing experiences. I wonder, do you have anything to share about peer review as a journal editor?
Yes, I find it. It's easy and sometimes kind of, you know, fun to complain about it and it being a lot of work and not being paid and all these kinds of things. But having said all that, to be perfectly honest, it's also a really wonderful thing to do. Mm. Largely in my case, in my view, because I get to see things, read things that I normally would not have approached, that I would not have consumed. Because, you know, as a journal editor, you have to make the first call, you have to do the initial screening. And, you know, you do not choose what is submitted to the journal. Of course, each journal has its own sort of remit and domain. But, I mean, in our case, innovation and language learning and teaching, that's a very wide remit. And that's really, really interesting. And over the years, I would say that some of my most, you know, fruitful ideas and changes in my own thinking have come from, you know, being exposed to ideas that I otherwise wouldn't have been.
Mm-hmm. Right. So on a related note, I guess that's something that is quite unique to you because, as you said, you founded an international journal. So you're still editing it, but you're the founder of the journal. I wonder what was the impetus of founding a new journal, and what's the process like? Because I know, you know, maybe some people listening, they're interested in starting their own journals. Can you share a little bit about this?
Yes. So at that time for us, the impetus was very simple. There wasn't anything out there that really tried to give a voice to people who were involved in some type of transformative change. There are a lot of people who really do extremely interesting work, you know, whether they be teachers or administrators or policymakers, but who are not necessarily, and often certainly not primarily, academics. So although their research may not necessarily look the same way or meet the certain standards that have been sometimes somewhat arbitrarily imposed upon us as a discipline, you know, they really are at the chalk face, so to speak, trying to make a change. And we were very interested in giving people a chance to not just share their experiences, but perhaps more importantly, to draw lessons, insights, implications of their experiences, from their experiences, to be able to encourage, inform, inspire others to also engage in change processes in an informed way, and to essentially create an international community where we can, well, you know, we can learn from each other's experiences. The process of actually establishing the journal, it's been about 15 years. We went through the usual, as you would expect, the usual sort of format of you know, bringing together a really strong group of people from around the world with an interest in this particular area. We spoke to them at length. We tried to identify what issues they saw that there were. You know, we tried to really sort of clarify and make explicit the gap that existed, and to really kind of have their sort of buy-in before we approached a publisher formally. But a couple of things I'll say there. One is, it's taken us, you know, out of those 15 years, 13 years or so, to establish the journal to a point where it's now indexed in SSCI, for example. You know, just because you have a journal doesn't mean that it's immediately recognized, and that it immediately, of course, has the impact that you hope it will have. So it's a long-term process. The second thing I'll say is that, of course, you know, now, even more so than in the late 2000s, there are so many more opportunities for disseminating our work. And a lot of researchers, a lot of teachers, a lot of people involved in innovation, for example, are starting to question whether we need the traditional academic format, the peer-reviewed publishing format in our particular domain to disseminate, share, critique our work. For example, what you're doing with the podcast and other formats often allow us to reach a much larger audience in a much more direct way and have a lot more opportunity for interaction with our target audience, you know, the people who we're actually trying to speak with. So I would say that, you know, for those of you listening, if you have a niche, if you have an area that, you know, if you identify a gap, if there's something that you're particularly passionate about, certainly, you know, do not ignore the journals that exist. Do not ignore the possibility of establishing a new journal, but also really consider the word dissemination rather than the word publishing, and ask yourself which more closely aligns with your personal aspirations. Mm.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point about dissemination. I mean, publishing obviously is one way to disseminate research, but you know, especially we look at open science kind of practices. You know, for example, uploading preprints and all those things. And you know, certainly there are other avenues to publishing and disseminating research findings. So that's a very good point, Heil. On another related question, also about your role as editor, because I know that you also guest edit for journals. So for example, you edit a special issue for certain journals. I wonder if I ask you to compare your experience as a journal editor, for example, in innovation, language learning, and teaching, and for example, a guest editor for a special issue in language learning technology, for example. How would you compare those experiences?
Oh, they're completely different, because in the latter case, you are essentially identifying a very specific, you know, subdomain, a particular area that you have an interest in, and you really are a guest, and your hosts basically provide you a temporary platform. But you know, the specific topic and the potential contributors, etc., are a lot more defined. You know what you're, you know, what you're hoping for, at least. I wouldn't say that you know what you're doing, because often I don't know what I'm doing, but I do certainly know what I'm hoping to do. So the two experiences are very different. I actually compare guest editing a journal with editing a book. It's in many ways very, very similar.
Right, thank you. So let's focus on another aspect of journal peer review. I'd like to look at your kind of journey from being a, for example, an early career researcher, doctoral student, all the way until now. Do you recall how you learned to navigate the journal peer review process? So for example, when did you start reviewing for journals? Do you remember one of the first instances, and how did you pick up the nitty-gritty of journal peer review?
Yeah, that's a really good question, because a lot of my own students, and I'm sure you have the same experience, Xinwang, is, you know, a lot of people are asking, well, how do I know where to start? How do I know if I'm doing it right? You know, who am I as an early career researcher, sometimes maybe, you know, still a student yourself, who am I to critique this work, because I don't know everything there is to know yet about this particular topic, for example. Well, I would say that there's a few very helpful guidelines there that have certainly helped me along my way, which is firstly to recognize that, well, nobody has all the answers, nobody knows everything, so you might as well give it a go and, you know, do your best to provide the most constructive and useful insights that you are able to muster. You know, it's better to do that than to not offer anything, I would offer to say. The second is to be willing to ask both your immediate colleagues and peers, as well as the journal editor, to support you. And a couple of ways in which I've done that, and which I found particularly helpful, were when I started out as an early career reviewer, was to ask mentors at my place of work to read my reviews, and possibly if they had time to even read the paper that I had reviewed, and to essentially to review my reviews. And that gave me a lot of confidence, because often what they would say is, yes, okay, you know, I can see that you've missed one or two things, because, you know, there are particular gaps in your knowledge, which makes sense as an early career researcher. But what you have written is, you know, you wrote it well, you're constructive, you offer some positive advice, etc. So that gave me a lot of courage to continue. But journal editors themselves as well can really be very supportive, depending on their workload. But if you say, hey, look, you've invited me to review this paper, I'd very gladly do so. It's an area of interest of mine. However, I'm aware of my limitations. I haven't done many or perhaps any reviews yet. You can say, yes, I'll accept the invitation on the condition that before you send it to the authors, that you have a look at it and possibly give me some comments about the appropriateness of my review. And that really helped me. And in fact, in my experience at the time, really no one said no to such requests.
Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah, I think that it's important, I mean, to have that hands-on experience and having that awareness that we are not working in isolation, but we're being supported by our mentors and our supervisors or journal editors, especially in our first few attempts to do peer review. I wonder if you recall any challenges that you faced as an early career researcher when you were asked to review, or, you know, both as a reviewer and also as an author, maybe thinking about your first few attempts submitting to journals and receiving your first batch of reviews. Do you still remember how you felt at that time and some of the challenges?
To be perfectly honest, I experienced a great sense of gratitude, and in some ways, even, you know, in my, you know, the very beginning of my career, a sense of disbelief that people would actually take what I had written seriously enough to spend a considerable amount of time reading it and commenting on it in detail. And that sort of response is something I still carry with me, even though I'm now on the other side of the aisle, so to speak. When I see people committing the time and resources, the limited time that we have, to really supporting people anonymously who they don't even know, but simply for the betterment of our discipline, of, you know, the scientific world as a whole. And I find that absolutely fascinating. There are not many careers in which you can experience this type of anonymously reciprocal longitudinal support. It's a wonderful thing, and I've been amazed by it from essentially from day one. So that would be the main kind of emotion that I would share.
Yeah, I think that mindset, it's very important, because I've seen people who grow very defensive, with the comments that they receive. But always remember that, I mean, people taking the time to read your work and, you know, trying to help you improve your work. I think that's a very, that kind of mentoring process is quite valuable, as you said. One of the challenges I would say that I heard from early career researchers is that they always ask, when are they ready to review a paper? And if they think that they are ready, they would like to give it a try. What are some of the avenues that they can take to kind of, you know, start their reviewer journey, so to speak?
I have found, both for myself, but I've also observed in others, that a really gentle and positive way of entering the world of peer review is to write book reviews. And I know that they are not popular because they don't really count as a publication, and they are, you know, there can be quite a lot of work. But I find that because you're not, you know, it's obviously very different from submitting an entire paper. It's also quite different from writing a review of an academic study, because in a book review you can and usually are expected to go a little bit broader and to look at the field as a whole and look at the recent developments and, you know, look forward to the future. And so it allows you to be a little bit more narrative in a way, and a little bit less, you know, purely technical. And I have found that, you know, getting your hands dirty, so to speak, with that type of writing is really wonderful, because it gives you the practice in formulating your thoughts, but it also is a type of writing that requires you to be critical in the most positive sense of that word. And so I think it's a really good sort of, you know, halfway option for early career researchers to consider.
That's a very good suggestion. Speaking of challenges, or maybe opportunities even in peer review, I noticed in the journal editing community, people have been talking about AI, generative AI and ChatGPT, obviously. I wonder, as an editor, I wonder what you think about AI and journal peer review. I've seen people listing ChatGPT as one of the authors in an article published in Nursing Education or something. I'm still getting my head around it. But what do you think about this?
Well, there's two answers to that question. One is simple and rather boring, which is that every journal, every community will have to decide for itself what tools it will allow or disallow its contributors to use. The more interesting and longer term discussion, well, when I say longer term, I don't mean long term, I just mean longer than the next 5 minutes, is that we are going to be presented with a very interesting range of questions and opportunities, as you said, as well. If I wanted to be controversial, I would say that peer review is dead. If I wanted to be more controversial, I would say that journal publishing is dead. And I wouldn't be saying these things entirely in jest. What do I mean? Well, to give you one example, and as you probably know, Xinguang, AI and technology and education in general are two areas of interest of mine, is that we're only really at the early stages of getting a sense of what artificial intelligence can do. But of course, this has been in development for several decades. You know, ChatGPT just made it visible to the wider public. But what it allows us to do, or will do very, very soon, is that you can imagine that, and the currently available technology essentially, in theory, already makes this possible, that you would have your own, as an author, you would have your own personal AI peer reviewer. You would be your own AI agent. What do I mean by that? Well, just like ChatGPT, for example, is based on an LLM, a large language model, which essentially is everything it can be fed. For example, everything that's on the internet. You can also, of course, create a database of your own writings, or possibly those writings of the authors that you are most inspired by. And you can then, using an AI agent, simply as a reasoning engine, to query what is in your specific personalized private database. So not only would you be able to look through what you've written and perhaps compare it with what other people who've written in the same domain have produced, you would also be able to use the reasoning engine to essentially go into a reflexive dialogue with yourself and draw parallels and insights and ideas and comparisons that you, well, it's funny to say you on your own wouldn't have thought about, but you in dialogue with yourself are able to extract from the, you know, the source material, which most of which you could have been producing yourself. So in the context of peer review, well, you could argue that if you wanted your paper to be reviewed by, say, the three or four most preeminent researchers in your specific subdomain, which is unlikely to happen if you, you know, submit it to a journal, but, well, you could actually very easily create a database with an AI agent on top of it and engage in dialogue with these eminent researchers who might be querying you and who you could query in turn about the quality of your contribution. And you could argue that that is a lot more powerful and probably a lot more entertaining than waiting for some anonymous reviews from people who may or may not be preeminent researchers in your field.
That's a very innovative response, I guess, because most of the conversations that I've heard about AI and academic publishing, it's quite punitive in nature. It's about how to detect plagiarism, how to identify, you know, materials that are not original. But I think that's, you know, what you suggested, it's definitely something that's easy to do for early career researchers to do before they submit to journals, for example, and kind of having that kind of internal dialogue, so to speak, you know, prior to the journal peer review process. So something to think about, and that also gave me an idea that I think probably I have to add a question for my future episodes about AI and journal peer review things. I offer that. Let's talk a little bit more about supporting early career researchers and doctoral students in a peer review process. I mean, as a senior academic yourself and, you know, a professor, a supervisor, what do you think ECRs need the most in terms of being supported in the peer review process?
I think the support, the most useful type of support is a combination of affective support and technical support. By affective, I mean just having a friendly, constructive, positive community, whether it's your immediate peers in your workplace or whether it's an online community or whether it's people like yourself who are providing a platform to tell you, you know, yes, it's okay, you can do this, you know, you just you know, giving you the courage to share your thoughts and have your, you know, your voice heard. I think a lot of people are simply shying away from stepping up to this type of work simply for fear of, you know, what if I'm not good enough? What if I can't do it? What if I don't have anything to contribute? And that's very, very rarely the case. Secondly, what I mean by technical support is that it's very, very rare to actually receive instruction and or explicit feedback on the writing of a review. So if you're a doctoral student or an undergraduate student, even doesn't matter, you submit assignments, you submit drafts, and you get hopefully detailed, clear, explicit feedback on what was good about your writing and what was not so good and how it could be improved. And it's very rare to find an institution where professors and the students actually look at the produced reviews, peer reviews that students might engage in writing and see how it might have been phrased differently, how, for example, the reviewer might have included more examples or additional resources. In other words, we're expected, and especially early career researchers are expected, to sort of figure this out by themselves. And unfortunately, you know, if you have to do that, you're going to base yourself on the models that you have been exposed to yourself. So if you've had bad reviews in the past, bad as in, for example, not being, you know, particularly detailed or not being particularly constructive or what have you, then, well, if nobody's told you that that is actually not the right way to do it or not the most meaningful way to do it, then it's not impossible that you're going to emulate, you're going to copy that sort of peer review behavior yourself. And so I think there would be a real benefit in including peer reviewing as a component of graduate programs.
Right. I think you mentioned instruction. And I think that that's a question that I ask almost all of the guests. In the kind of PhD programs or doctoral programs, we have structured training on, for example, academic writing, with writing retreats, for example. So that's part of the program, whereas you rarely see like elements of peer review training, because we're supposed to learn it hands-on with our own peer review experience. So I wonder if you see a need for more structured support in terms of journal peer review, I mean, in the context of doctoral education, for example, or you believe that the best way, it's really what we're doing now to get our hands dirty, or maybe a combination of both.
I think there should be an apprenticeship and coupled with explicit explicit instruction and feedback during, say, a doctoral program, not just, by the way, as the author of a review, but also as the recipient of a review, right? How, you know, what are your strategies for dealing with a review, especially if that review isn't positive, but even if it is positive, and how do you respond in your, you know, reply to the editor, for example, appropriately and meaningfully to a review that you've received? Again, we're sort of expecting people to figure this out themselves, which, you know, some people are good at doing and some people less so, but even so, it's probably not the most efficient way. So having a guided, more collaborative approach to this, I think would be really, really helpful, where, you know, somebody can identify as, or in some other way might have already by the editor been identified as an early career researcher. And, you know, if that is the case, be paired with a more experienced mentor, coach, colleague, whatever you want to call it, for the first two or three or four or whatever number of reviews. I think that would benefit everyone.
Right. Yeah. I think that's very useful advice. So my last question, Heil, do you have anything to say to early career researchers or doctoral students who are thinking about submitting their first ever manuscript to a journal? I kind of know what you're going to say, but I want to just let you say, what would you tell them to do when they're thinking and maybe doubting or maybe considering?
Well, you don't know what I'm going to say, because I'm going to say you have to submit it to Innovation and Language Learning and Teaching, is the number one journal out there. Now, all joking aside, of course, just go for it. I think every person you've interviewed would have said the same. Sometimes it's helpful to not take yourself and things like, you know, a journal submission process too seriously. Sometimes it can be very helpful to just sort of observe what happens, almost as if you were an outsider kind of looking in through the window and seeing what's going on inside. And if you do it that way, it can be kind of fun, even if perhaps you get a bad review or, you know, your article gets rejected, whatever. But just kind of observe it as a play, as a theater. And just observe the different characters, observe how they act and react, and you know, how some people take on ridiculous roles sometimes, and how some people can be particularly comedic or particularly harsh or whatever, and just, you know, enjoy that, because, you know, honestly, a large part of being and becoming an academic is going to be having to deal with that charade that is the peer review process. And if you can enjoy that for all the wonderful weirdness that it can sometimes offer, all the better for it. You're going to be a much happier academic.
Thanks, Hyo. I think I agree with everything that you have shared. I mean, to me, that there's that added dimension that I think I experienced some of the things that you said before, you know, being mentored by you, being provided opportunities and, you know, opportunities to kind of discuss with you about peer reviews and, you know, talk about the qualities. And I think that really helped me as an academic. So I definitely think that these are good ideas. So thank you very much, Hyo, for your time. Hyo Reinders is the editor of Innovation in Language Learning and Teaching. Thank you very much for your time. For more information or more content about journal peer review, do check out our scholarlypeers.com website with our podcast on Apple and Google and on Podbean. And thank you very much for listening.